Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose. Presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and I'm delighted to be with you tonight. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
I always like to begin my work with spiritual agreement. And this was a beautiful blessing that was given to me by my friend Jana Massey. And so if all of you listening could please join us in this, I'll say it now. It goes like this. Together we acknowledge that everything that we think and that we say and that we do at this time will be for the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree with me?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Our dream time really lets us open up our vision center. When we are thinking of any kind of image, even if we just take a moment to think of, say, the front door of our house, or perhaps a beautiful rose that we've seen at some point in time, we are engaging our imagination. And our imagination is very much a part of our third eye, our clairvoyant function. And so when we practice paying attention to the images in our dreams and recalling them, and they are quite, you know, they're coming up from our subconscious mind or from our higher self, which are both the sources of our psychic ability and our insights as well. So when we practice our dream recall, we are really practicing our accessing of psychic skill. So that's one of the things that I found to be a cornerstone of development of psychic ability. We spoke last week a little bit about, or 2 weeks ago, about self-love. And that, I feel, is the foundation. And then I think that dreams are one of the cornerstones, and along with meditation and prayer and having a sanctuary where we can do personal, private, inner work. So part of our sanctuary is that bedtime when we first wake up. And so if we can take the time to just catch our dreams, then we're... are helping ourselves to develop our third eye.
Well, thank you very much. But on that subject of dream recall, at the moment I seem to be remembering my dreams, a lot of dreams, but there are periods in my life when I seem to be very poor at remembering dreams. And for example, last night I know I remembered a dream immediately upon waking, and I meant to write it down, and I forgot. And then by lunchtime, I'd completely forgotten it, so I have no recollection of it now. Could you perhaps give me some advice on how I can improve my ability to recall dreams?
Yes, I'd be delighted, Tony. And thank you so much for asking that question. It's a really good one. So often people feel that they don't dream, but really we do all dream every night. And we dream for quite a long period of time. They are usually sporadic and periodic, but we dream usually within the first hour after falling asleep. We'll kind of dip down into a lower level of sleep and then come up a little bit for our rapid eye movement sleep time. And that's when we're dreaming. And most people have 7 or 8 dreams per night. Everybody has at least 3 or 4, though. And children dream more than adults, and older people dream a little less than middle-aged adults, but we do all dream a lot. And our dreams are usually lasting from between, just a few minutes, like 5 minutes, or all the way into 20 or 30 minutes for the longer dreams. And the way that we can catch our dreams in the morning is if we get, and maybe you could show the first slide, Tony, if you can. And I'll just read out now the text that it says there. It says to get plenty of good quality sleep so you can awaken rested and keep the same sleep time schedule every night. Now, these slides, you can access them at any time, and I'm going to have a total of six of them on dream recall. And we'll play them throughout the show so that you can see the beautiful pictures that Frank, my husband, has very kindly arranged for me there. And so that first slide is a very important one. When we can awaken refreshed and not have to awaken to an alarm clock or something very jarring, then we are much more likely to catch our dreams. And so that's the first place to start. So, you know, get to bed earlier. Forget the TV and just put yourself into bed and get a good night's sleep so that you know how it is. When we've had a good night's sleep, the alarm clock can actually serve more like a backup so that if we aren't awake, it will wake us up. But mostly we'll wake up before the alarm clock goes off. And then we have that little 5 minutes or so to catch a dream. And one of the ways that I love to help myself interpret dreams is to draw the dream as well. So if I don't have time to write down the dream, if I have to be off and going somewhere, sometimes I'll just draw a quick picture. I'll usually draw a circle on the paper that fills the size of the page as much as possible. And then I'll just quickly sketch in the images, and that will be enough to help me, oh, yeah, I remember what that dream was later that day. Because, like you, if I don't catch them, they're usually gone by lunchtime.
So you would say it's important to actually do the recalling right there and then.
I think it is, yes. It really does help us. And I love what you shared with me the other day, how sometimes you can ask yourself to just remember what the dream was, and that later during the day when you're not thinking about it, that imagery will just pop back into your mind. That's another really great way to recall dreams too. So thank you very much for that one, Tom.
Yeah, it's funny because I completely forgot that. My own advice, I completely forgot it.
Yeah, it's a good one. So maybe you could show the next slide then, Tony, and we'll just mention that.
As the next slide is loading, Josephine, I'd like to share with you a question that we've received from Michelle.
Oh, great.
She sent in an email question because it speaks directly to what you were just talking about. Michelle writes, "Hi, I have never dreamed in my life. Why? My friends tell me about how vivid they dream. I have nothing to add."
Yes, and that is not uncommon. My husband Frank sometimes for years felt that he didn't really dream very much. He would have an occasional dream that he would remember, but not very often. But so, Michelle, the truth of it is that you actually do dream every night. Dream researchers have done extensive work on this, and they've never found a single person who doesn't dream. In fact, all of our four-legged animal companions all dream as well. Many of us have seen a dog, you know, sound asleep, whimpering and wiggling their legs as if they're running just a little bit. But we are more or less paralyzed while we are dreaming. It's kind of a funny thing, but there are certain chemicals that take over in our body that so that we won't hurt ourselves flailing around in our dream images. And so we do all dream, and the trick is just in learning how to remember the dreams, Michelle. So I think that if you have an opportunity to follow some of the directions that are going to be on the slides today, that you might just surprise yourself. And then, in addition, I like to recommend that people practice dreaming while they're awake. So many of us have had the experience of daydreaming as children, and that's a really nice way to sort of jumpstart the dream function. And so if you can take some time, preferably out in nature, if you can spend a little time out in nature, maybe lying on the beach or out walking in the woods, and just let yourself daydream. Just think up anything that you would like, just something pleasant that you would enjoy. You know, children spend a lot of time daydreaming, and that's a great way for us to really activate, and they also have more dreams than adults, so that's a night dream. So that's a great way for us to activate our dream function. So that's what I would like to recommend for you, is to make note of these slides either during the show or after the show when you want to play the recall. You certainly can at any time. And then also begin by doing a little daydreaming and use your imagination. It will activate that third eye for you and help you to remember.
That seems to me excellent advice. Thank you very much, Josephine.
Oh, thank you, Tony. Yeah.
Did you have more to say about dream recall?
Yes, let's go on to that next slide. So the next slide says, allow yourself to awaken slowly and without an alarm clock. and we mentioned that just a little bit a few moments ago, and decrease sensory input before sleep. And I say there, skip the late night movie. And the reason for that is that I find myself, I'm a very practiced dream recaller. I will often recall 8 or more dreams a night. If I really just put my mind to it, I can just pull them back and pull out another one and pull out another one, because I'm quite practiced at it. And anything that we practice, we can do well. So it's like, you know, when you first sweep a floor for the very first time holding a broom, you're very clumsy. You don't really know how to do that. It feels uncomfortable. But now that I've swept floors, you know, hundreds and thousands of times, I can sweep them really well. Same thing with dream recall. And then I like to skip the late night movie because often there are very vivid images there that can linger with me. And I'll wake up and I'll find that I'm thinking of the movie instead of catching my dreams. And movies are fun, and they're very entertaining, and you know, the images can be quite, well, you know, they'll stick with us. So that's why I don't usually plan on going out to the movies if I have something that I'd like to dream, a problem that I'd like to dream the solutions for. So we don't watch TV usually at night, and also, too, just avoiding anything that's too stimulating just before bed is a good idea. And then the last little point on this slide is to limit the fluids so that there's no need to rush to the restroom in the morning. Or another thing is to just go up and you know, use the restroom sometime in the middle of the night so that when you do wake up in the morning, there's not such that urgency to go to the restroom. And that helps us to be able to give that extra minute, or it really only takes just a minute or two to catch that dream so that we can then write it down. Well, thank you, Tony.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. There's so many questions that people are sending in for you to answer. I'm wondering if I should give you another question, or would you like to go ahead to another slide?
Why don't we do another question, and then we'll go back to the slides again, and just remind me when we're done. We'll do the slides.
Okay. Well, here's another question. This one is from Chloe.
Great.
And Chloe emails us as follows. Hi, Josephine. When I have had a flying dream, it usually has a quality of freedom or lucid dreaming. How can I have more of them, and what do they mean?
Oh, thank you, Chloe, for that beautiful question. I love flying dreams. You know, I had a couple of reoccurring dreams as a child, and one of the reoccurring dreams that I had was of flying, and I would have it every summer, just at the start of summer, on the last day of school, on Friday. That night, I would usually dream of a flying dream. I think that was kind of an interesting statement about how I felt about school. In other words, I didn't feel very free while I was in school, but as soon as I was out of school, I had this wonderful feeling of freedom. And usually flying dreams are that. They are some sort of a celebratory event. There's, you know, whenever we're up in the air in our dreams, often, well, not whenever, but because I really do sincerely feel that only the dreamer themselves can interpret the dream. But in general, as a general sort of dream motif, when we're up in the air, when we're in an airplane or when we're flying, we're in touch with our higher self, with that part of inspiration that really motivates us in our life. So when you're having those flying dreams, it's because there is something that's really great going on, something that has liberated your spirit and helped you to feel free. And so in order to have more of them, then that's something that that you'll want to think about how to do. And so following your dreams, following your bliss, following your joy, doing whatever you really love to do and trying to stay with that will help you to have more of those flying dreams. So I hope that answered your question.
Oh, that was, well, it certainly helped me, Josephine. So thank you very much for that. And I'm sure it helped a lot of our listeners.
Yeah.
In connection with that, we have a question from Marion from Riverside.
Oh.
And she asks the following question. Hi, Josephine. If dreams are in the big plan of life to help us, who is the helper helping us?
Well, that's a great question, Marion. I think that it's our higher self, which I believe is our own unique connection with the divine. And, you know, this is one of those wonderful metaphysical questions, you know. My father was an atheist, and he didn't believe at all that there was anything after life. But when I was with him at his dying time, I got a little bit of a glimmer of a sense that he actually did really believe. And I think that's because my mother, who had preceded him in death, and his parents, I think, came to join him at that time when he was passing over. And I feel that we all have many helpers in spirit all the time, all around us, and I'm so grateful to them in my life, because I feel that that's part of the magic, part of the stepping into magic, is that if I'm going with my inspirations and with what I feel called to do in the world, then my spirit guides are with me, helping, and I think that it's mostly my grandmother Noni and my mom and, you know, my dad as well that are urging me on. And when we do make that transition into death, we are in that elevated sense of self. I love the one expression that Ram Dass uses that he got from his friend Pat Rodegast through an entity that she channels called Emmanuel. And Emmanuel said to Ram Dass, when Ram Dass asked about death, he said, "What can I tell people about death?" And Emmanuel said, "Ram Dass, tell them it's like taking off a tight shoe." Isn't that a wonderful
thought?
Yeah, I think so too. And so I think that when we are in spirit, we are liberated. And then I think that part of what happens to us when we sleep and when we dream, and especially believe that this happens when we go into that very deep sleep, there is a much deeper level of sleep that's below the dream level of sleep, where I believe that we connect with our higher self, where our spirit is liberated to unite with the divine once more. And Houston Smith, who wrote the book The World's Religions, who, you know, is a tremendous scholar of the world's religions, he said that in his book, Cleansing the Doors of Perception, that he had an argument with his spiritual teacher from India about this. He didn't feel that there was anything going on in a really deep sleep. But, you know, we've studied dreams in sleep here in the West for the last, you know, 50, 60 years or something like that. But in the East, they've, of course, studied sleep and dreaming for millennia. And they feel that that very deep sleep is when our spirit is liberated, our own spirit is liberated back to the source from which we come, the divine, as it were. And he said that he didn't believe it until sometime after his Swami had passed away, and he was under anesthesia for a wisdom tooth extraction. And when he came out of anesthesia, he found himself exclaiming, "How beautiful! Oh, this is so beautiful!" And if it wasn't for that, and then it completely vaporized and left, and if it wasn't for that experience, he wouldn't have known that that was the case. And then his daughter went on and said she had a similar experience when she had her wisdom teeth pulled out. And in both cases, they were awakened out of their anesthesia a little early because the waiting room was getting a little crowded after the surgery. And she said, "I love it, I love it." And then they woke up and had no memory whatsoever of that deep liberation with spirit. But after he had that experience, he became convinced that his Swami was correct and that there is that deep visiting of spirit that happens. And so that's what I think is what is going on. I think that we do have helpers helping us in the dream state, and that they are helping to bring us our inspirations and our guidance. And then we as well have messages from our subconscious mind letting us know that the things that might be holding us back. So thank you very much, Marian, for asking that question.
Well, thank you so much for answering it, Josephine. So, Josephine, would you like to have another question, or would you like to share some more with the slides?
Let's do a little bit of both. Why don't we start first with the next slide, and then we'll go on to a question right after that.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, Tony.
There's the next slide.
All right. So this one says, sleep on your right side. And I'm not sure why that is, but it does seem to increase dream recall. And if you must move, and this one is the one that I find is really the most important, if you must move when you wake up from a dream, do so very gently and slowly. And while awakening slowly, try to avoid large muscle movement. I find that if I just barely move my arm to reach for my dream journal, I can catch my dream. But if I have a big stretch and a yawn, oh, they just disappear so quick. So if I have done that, though, if I have had a big stretch and a yawn, if I resume the same position in bed that I had upon awakening, I can usually catch it again.
Oh, I tell you what, Josephine,
yes.
Just because you mentioned that, there is a question which is so deliberately focused on that, that perhaps I should share it with you now before you go on.
That would be great.
This one is from Leah from Palo Alto in California.
Okay.
And she writes specifically, how do you journal dreams? I can remember my dreams when I wake up, but if I move a little in bed, the dream goes away. Do I write the big picture of the dream first, or just a few pieces of the dream, or the mood of the dream? How do you start?
Yes, that's a great question, Leah. I think it's a very unique process to everyone. I usually start with catching an image, and so I'll try to hold that image, and then I try not to move just yet, and not even to reach for my journal. And then I try to follow that image back to see if there was anything that preceded it, any images that might have been just before that. And maybe there was one or two of those, and then even just a little more. And then I try to get also a feeling. And all of this is happening before I'm moving. And sometimes the feeling will then, I'll remember maybe another feeling from a little earlier part before those images that I've already remembered. And then now that I have, you know, maybe three or four or maybe five or six images, those are like little pearls and maybe two really kind of significant feelings or moods, then I'll just try to move one arm to my dream journal and grab that with the pen and pull that over right next to the pillow and not to make any other movements. And then I'll usually just jot down just two or three key words for those first images that I've been able to pull back. And then maybe just a word or two to describe the mood. And then I'll stop there with the pen, and I'll lie there just a little longer and see if I can drag up any more images from the dream, something from just a little earlier still, or maybe something that happened a little later that I didn't realize that had happened just before I woke up. And I hadn't quite caught that because I was going with maybe a stronger image that was in the middle somewhere. And dreams really do have an anatomy. They tend to have a beginning where the scene is set, and then a kind of a raising action where we kind of get some ideas as to what's going on. And then often, if we're lucky, we can even catch a resolution to the dream, a kind of a way to go or what to do. And so taking the time to catch those little nuggets like that, Leah, really does help. And then after I have gotten that part done and I've jotted down every little bit that I can remember, then usually by now I really do have to go to the restroom. So I often will take my dream journal with me into the restroom and then return to the bed and then return to the same position. And I might write down a few things while I'm in the restroom, anything that kind of elaborate on some of those images that I've already made a little one or two word note about. And then when I get back into the bed, I flush it out a little bit. And I try to remember everything that I can about it. Now, the dream researchers have found that when people first wake up, they tend to have the most accurate recall, and that later, if they're trying to recall it, it can be a little bit embellished. That's okay. I don't mind. I don't care if it's embellished or not. I just go with whatever I can remember. And I go ahead and get all that information down. I try to get colors and textures and sights and sounds, the way I felt. I will often even take the time to create a name for the dream so that I can have a name. And I'll usually write that at the top of the dream journal after I've gotten the rest of the information down. And that all just helps me to hold on to that dream image. And then the other thing that I'll do, Leah, is during the day, I'll try to take a moment to glance at my dream journal once or twice to just remember those images, because I do find that they can help me with my waking life. And so keeping them current. And even still, dreams just continue to evaporate on us, because like if I haven't looked at a dream for 2 or 3 weeks, if it wasn't a really big dream, I'll think, did I dream this? I don't remember writing that at all. But I usually try to do the work with the dream the day of or the day around, you know, maybe the day, 2 or 3 days after, if there's a particularly big dream that I've really enjoyed. So I hope that has answered your question, Leah. And thank you, Tony, for bringing those two together. I think that went very nicely with that particular slide.
Yeah, that was very helpful. So would you like another slide, or should we have another question?
Let's go ahead and do the next slide, because it kind of ties in with that.
Okay.
So this slide says, have your dream journal and pen in easy reach. And this last little bit is quite important, to have a boundary to avoid early intrusion on your sleep time there by children and pets. So my mom and dad, I used to think this was so unbelievably cruel as a child that they would lock their door to their bedroom. And I can remember sitting outside the door and crying. And some of you may know that Frank and I have a new little baby puppy. Her name is Honey. And she does the same thing if we, you know, if we are really too busy to have our little dog. Most of the time she's with us, of course, but every once in a while, it's like especially, like for instance, right now, she's out in the backyard. So she might be sitting out there going, ooh, I wish I could come in. And I can remember doing that as a child to my parents' door, and they never opened up when I was whimpering. They would just let me find my way into some other activity and some other interest, and then they would come out later after I was no longer, you know, sitting there begging, because they knew that if they responded to that, that then I would do that every day until I got my way. And you know, sometimes cats will want to go out and, or feed me. So our cats are two closed doors away from the bedroom. They're on the other end of the hall, and we never respond to their cries either, because I do really value my dream time and find it to be most helpful in guiding me in my life. So we have a good boundary between those that might come to interrupt our dream time. So I would recommend that too also to our listeners who are looking for ways to remember their dreams.
Thank you very much, Josephine.
Sure.
Perhaps I could ask you or share with you a question from Ed in Santa Cruz, California.
Yeah.
He writes, hi, Josephine. Does just the mood of a dream provide some message or meaning? If we ignore the details of a dream, what meaning can be derived from the mood? And there's some examples: serious, silly, sad, frightening, odd, boring.
Yes, that's a very good question. And yes, I absolutely do derive meaning from the mood of a dream. So, you know, our dreams, I like to say that they reflect and they reveal. And so they reflect the state of our life, what's going on for us right now. And then they reveal insights and inspirations. And so that's where the mood comes from. It's like, what is this dream meaning to me? So if there is something that's going on in your life that feels a little stuck or stuffed, you know, maybe we'll get it might have an image that's something like that, where we're stuck in a dream, or we'll have that feeling upon awakening up, like, oh, gosh, I just really didn't quite get, I don't feel liberated from my sleep, or I don't feel really able to move ahead in my life. And those are very good moods to pay attention to. We definitely want to give those our time and our thought. So if we wake up with a dream mood, something like that, taking the time, perhaps in meditation or out in a walk in nature, to sort of find out where we might have a similar mood in our waking life. And most often we will, if we give it our intention. You know that saying, I like to say, intention plus attention brings manifestation. So if we take the time alone by ourselves, usually, to recall where that mood from the dream has a similar resonance with a mood in our life, then we can go ahead and work on it. Now, I love the one that you said about silly, because that's a fun one too. And so we may want to have a sort of, you know, find what is working for us. That might be one of our inspirations, one of our revealings from our dreams. And so taking the time to find out where that silly feeling came from is mm-hmm. a really good idea. And that might lead us to something that we would really love to do, or something that would make us very happy. And so thinking about in the context of our lives, I always like to think of dreams in terms of the context of our lives. And so what's going on in your life, and how can you recreate that mood from your life, and then just see if that doesn't help to guide you.
So are you saying that if initially the dream doesn't seem to have any direct connection. I mean, sometimes I have dreams and I think, well, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And whether it's the feeling or the place or the person in it,
yes,
or what I'm doing. But are you suggesting that with those kinds of dreams that don't have an obvious sort of like meaning or starting point to interpret them right at the beginning, that I should just spend some time actually exploring where something of that quality of the dream is actually happening in my life, and there may be a message for me there?
Absolutely, Tony, and Ed, both of you. Yes, it does bring meaning to us in our lives. If we can trace that mood back, it will help us to guide us. That's what our dreams are really all about. They are about guiding us. And so if we take the time, we can discover the answers to these riddles. And they really are like little riddles. And, you know, we spend a third of our life in sleep. And it just seems to me like we might as well, you know, discover the purpose of it and live it, really know. And, you know, this is about knowing ourselves and knowing who we are. And know thyself was the creed that was written over the city gates of the ancient city of Delphi, which was pre-Abrahamic religion. The old matrifocal culture that lived there wrote know thyself, and it was later adopted by some of the Abrahamic religions as a creed as well. And it's a really important thing to know who you are. One of the great ways to do that is through getting messages from our dreams. And our dreams will give us messages on our spiritual progress, on our health, on our relationships, on our beliefs about ourselves and the world. And as I mentioned before, they allow communications from our higher self, our superconsciousness, or our subconscious self. And, you know, the reason why they call it a subconscious and a superconscious is because it's separate from the conscious mind. Our conscious day-to-day way that we function and move through the world, we are not often aware of what is going on in our subconscious or our superconscious mind. Now, of course, we can work with ourselves to become progressively more and more aware. And the way that we do that is through our feelings. And so if we take the time, especially to work with feelings that we've woken up with from a dream, we can learn a lot about ourselves and give ourselves some direction in life.
Excellent. That's really helpful. But that brings me to another question, which is that sometimes our dreams can be really disturbing.
Yeah.
And there's a question from Julia in Seattle, and she writes, "Hi, Josephine. When children have a lot of dreams of being chased and they are frightened by their dreams, what information is there for us as parents, and how can we help our children?"
Well, that's a beautiful question, Julia, and thank you very much for asking that one. Because, you know, children, since they do dream a lot, they are very much aware of and in touch with their dream world. And I think that's because children are so freshly new from spirit. You know, they've just been born. I don't know if you've heard that wonderful story about the little baby that the mother and father had one of those speaker phones in with the infant. And they had an older daughter. She was about 2 years old, the older daughter. And she kept asking to be left alone with the baby. And the parents were a little concerned, but they thought, well, we've got the speaker phone. You know, it should be fine. And they heard their little child go in there, and she was just speaking, and she went into the baby, and she said to the baby, "Tell me about God, because I'm forgetting." Isn't that a beautiful story?
That's lovely.
Yeah, and so children spend a lot of time in their, you know, when we are in our sleep time, we are really touching back in with the divine. And so, and they do a lot of sleeping and a lot of napping, and that's a good thing. And sometimes they do have frightening dreams, and they're very much aware of their dream world. And kids will often talk about their dreams with their parents, and I really encourage parents to do that with their children, because that can help the parents to know what's going on with the child, just like we said, you know, they reflect where we are and who we are in the world. And so when a parent is aware of what their child is dreaming about, then they can help to guide their child as well. And so when the dreams are scary and frightening, it's a good idea to take the time and to try to unravel those dreams with the child, just like you would using any number of dream interpretation methods, So I love drawing the dream, like I mentioned earlier. You can draw a circle on a big piece of paper and draw the dream in there and have the child, you know, start to practice drawing. This is not anything about drawing for art. It's just about drawing to kind of keep track of the dream and what happened. And then talking about it with the child. And then the parent can look for a mood that is in the dream that is similar to a mood that is in that child's life. So maybe the child feels stuck or trapped in the dream. And that might be that they feel stuck or trapped in a school situation. Maybe there are some children that are being a little hard on that little one when they're in class. And so then maybe the parent can, you know, speak to the principal or to the teachers and see if they can help out in that regard. Or if the child is being chased, there's, like you mentioned, Julia, with this child's dream, there is the child is feeling, you know, having some sort of feeling of being pursued or of not being safe. And a lot of times when we are coming out into the world with our true self, we can have those dreams of being chased. You know, society and our culture has very rigorous and set ways that it wants us to be. And when we come out and express ourselves as we truly are, we can feel the pressure of the culture trying to track us down and say, no, you can't be doing that. You should be really yielding to what the culture has to say. So that can also be happening. But on a much more concrete and physical level, I always feel that it's very important to pay attention to, especially with dreams in children, reoccurring dreams. And if those dreams happen at a particular time during the night. So there are the Chinese meridians where the body is being cleansed every 2 hours during the course of the night. And this information is widely available on the Internet. So go ahead and look up the Chinese meridians and see what time your child is awakening. And then find out if there is an organ that corresponds to that time. So, you know, for 2 hours the kidneys are being cleansed. For 2 hours the liver is being cleansed. For 2 hours the colon is being cleansed. And the heart and the lungs and all of the different organs. And many of them, of course, are during the waking hours of the day, during the daylight hours. But just as many are being cleansed during the nighttime hours and when we're at the equinox time of the year, when the days and the nights are of equal length. And so during those sleep hours, if that child is waking up repeatedly at a particular time, then it might be a good idea to look and see, well, maybe this is the liver time that this child keeps waking up. And so taking a look to see how that health of the liver is for the child and consulting with a naturopathic physician. You know, many physicians will recommend milk thistle for liver disorders or maybe, you know, corn silk tea for a kidney disorder or something like that to just kind of help support the physical health of the child as well if there does happen to be a recurring pattern for the waking time of that little dreamer.
So, well, perhaps I could just, you know, as a parent myself, ask a little bit more on that subject, because
mm-hmm.
I've talked to other parents whose children have had recurring nightmares,
yeah.
And they've often been very unsure whether they themselves were equipped to deal with it, and some of them I know have sought professional help. So would you recommend that they start? I mean, well, what would you recommend in that situation if the parents are extremely worried about recurring nightmares?
Absolutely. Seeking professional help is a great idea. And there are a number of therapists that are particularly well-versed in dreams and in working with dreams. And there's also a number of therapists that are really good with working with children, you know, marriage and family counselors. And using the sand play therapy can be very great for helping children to get their emotions out and to express themselves, especially if they're very little and if they're not that good with words just yet. So absolutely, Tony, that's a really good point. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Excellent. Okay, well, would you like another question or would you like to move on with the slide?
Well, yes, why don't we do, well, we probably should do one more slide because we've got two more to go and we want to make sure, and then we'll do another question right after that.
Okay.
So this slide says that, I guess this is the last of our slides for the dreams, so we'll just jump right into it. So this one says that dried mugwort herbs make a nice small dream pillow, and crystals, especially amethyst, help us to remember. Dream catchers, you know, those wonderful little hoops that have like a little web-like weaving in there and sometimes have little pieces of beads or other things woven into it, Those are very nice to hang by the bedside as well. And then B vitamins all help additionally. And I've heard that B6 especially, somewhere around 25 to 50 milligrams, are supposed to be especially helpful for recalling dreams. And, of course, with anything like that, you'd want to consult with your physician first. But, you know, when we do something like that, like make a dried mugwort herb dream pillow, you know, you might take, like, say, a little tiny clean cotton muslin tea bag and stuff it full of dried mugwort herb. And just give that a little squish before you go to bed. That essential oil that's stored in the leaf will be released, and you'll catch the aroma of that. And that is something that, again, we're using our intention with our attention to create manifestation. And same with the dream catcher. If we've got a dream catcher that we've gone out specifically and looked for a dream catcher and hung that by our bedside that says, yeah, I want to remember my dreams, so I'm going to put a dream catcher here. Or amethyst crystals. Amethysts teach us that there is no death, and they are the spiritual stone. And since we are in spirit when we are asleep and when we dream, having amethyst by our bedside can help us too. So that's our last slide there.
Excellent. Well, in that case, I will ask you another question from one of our listeners.
Great. Thank you.
This one is from Emily in Atascadero.
All right.
And she writes, are dreams of places you know you've never been nor seen in movies, past lives?
Well, I think that they certainly can be. But we are very creative, and so we can also create lots of places that we've never been. Most of my dreams, I would say, take place in places that I've never been. And I don't necessarily think that they are associated with past lives, but they certainly can be. And especially if you wake up and you have a feeling that it was of a past life place, then I would say, yeah, it is. Because trust your own self. You are the ultimate authority in your own life. And I also feel that when we dream of places that we have been in the past, like, say, our childhood home, often it can be a little report to ourselves about something that began at that time in our life. Or let's say the dream is of a place that we visited on vacation once. And so we might have had a particular thing going on in our life at that time, or we might have had a particular feeling. Maybe it was a particularly joyous or free feeling, or maybe it was a time when we had taken ourselves on vacation to clear out some emotional trauma that we'd had. So just kind of realizing that there may be a tie-in with the current condition that your dreams are trying to give you information on with a mood or a feeling that you had at that other place in time. So, and I think also, too, that when we dream that we're in costume, that can also be a hint to a past life. So let's say we dream that we're in Elizabethan clothing. That can either speak to us about Elizabethan value systems, or it can be about a time when we were maybe experiencing something in that lifetime that's similar to what we're experiencing now in this lifetime.
Well, that raises a very interesting question or difficulty sometimes that people have in interpreting dreams, knowing, you know, which way to go. For example, mm-hmm. you know, the Elizabethan theme, if that came up, you know, whether we should go in the direction of that, you know, time period and the kind of things that were happening then, or whether we should maybe any personal associations that we ourselves have. What would you say to that, Josephine?
Well, thank you, Tony. I think that dreams have many, many layers. And so not only can we get information about ourselves in a dream, but we can also get information about our larger community or even the world. And similarly, that's an example of layers of interpretations of dreams. Similarly, we can also get layers of interpretations about a particular theme like that. So not only might we gain information about ourselves from the Elizabethan costuming and theme, but we may also get information about the time and place.
Well, the moment you mentioned that, I remembered reading about Carl Jung's so-called Rivers of Blood dream, which he claims he had just before the outbreak of the Second World War,
mm-hmm.
which he thought was a precognitive dream,
yeah.
That something in him had become aware of the terrible times that we were about to enter. And on that subject, we have a question from Frank, who's emailed us to say, Tell us about precognitive dreams. How is it that we can see the future?
Yes, isn't that an interesting question? Thank you so much, Frank, for that one. Yeah. You know, my mother was a premonition dreamer, and she actually saved our lives when we were children. She dreamed that there was an alligator in the lake that we grew up on, and she didn't tell us about her dream. She just told us that we were not to swim in the lake, and that was it, and there was no questioning. And I'm sure the reason why she didn't tell us was because we would have said, that's ridiculous, we're in California, there's no alligators in California, what are you thinking? And we would have, you know, lobbied with our father to get him on our side, rationally speaking, there's no reason for that fear. And so she didn't share with us what the dream was. But then 2 weeks later, a 4.5-foot alligator was pulled out of the lake. And back in the day, they used to sell little alligators, little baby alligators in the pet stores. And apparently this one had been purchased as a pet and had been raised and had probably outgrown its accommodations in the bathtub and gotten a little hard to handle. And so they thought, well, there's a nice lake. Let's just turn this thing loose in there. And it was not a very big alligator, but it was certainly big enough to grab a child and pull it underwater and drowned it and pin it underneath a sunken boat or something and eat it over time. So we were very grateful when the lake caretaker came to the door and shared that he had just pulled this alligator out and advised that since my mom and dad had kids that maybe they should not go swimming in the lake for a little while. And so, you know, how did she know that? Well, we don't know how she knew, but she did know. And, you know, those of us who have had deja vus, and most of us have, many of us have, we somehow know that something that is going to happen in the future has come to us right now. And we don't know how that happens, but the way that I kind of like to look at it is we often think of time as a line. And, you know, things that happened in the past are on the backside of the line, and then what's happening right now is in the middle, and what's happening in the future is ahead of us on the line. But I think that if we bend that line into the shape of a wheel so that it's a circle and we put spokes on it like you would on a bicycle and then place ourselves at the axle right in the middle of the circle, there is a part of ourselves clearly because of these premonition and precognitive dreams that has the ability to travel out on some of those spokes to the future or to the past. And we know we can do that with our memory because we do that all the time, but we're not that familiar with traveling into the future, but we do have that capacity, and we can develop it if we work on developing our psychic ability, which is part of why I'm motivated to offer this radio show, because I think it's one of the missing links in our human development. We have denied our psychic ability culturally. We've suggested that it's scary or dangerous, and we've done the same thing with our dreams. That you don't want to mess with that stuff. It's not something to mess with, you know. So I think that the more time that we actually spend working with our dreams and developing our psychic ability, the better off we will all be.
Excellent. That's a wonderful image of us being the axle in the center of the wheel. That's really powerful. But on that subject of premonition, Emily has emailed the following question, which I think is really pertinent. She asks, how can you tell if a dream is a premonition or just a leftover worry?
Thank you, Emily. That's a really great one. The way that we can tell is by being really honest with ourselves and taking the time with our dream recall and really settling in. You know, when we have a dream, let's say we have a dream of blood, we know if that dream is about the blood from injury or accident or attack or war or danger, or if it's about the creative source of our life, that which nourishes us and feeds us. We know if an image in our dream is one to be feared or one to be loved. We just have a deep knowing about it. We go with the feeling of it. So I would say, in answer to your question, You know if it's a leftover worry. There's a part of you that does know. And so just taking the time and being very gentle with yourself and very very calm and reflective and, you know, again, I like to go out into nature because nature is so soothing. And just taking those dream images, that which can be sometimes troubling, and sitting with them and just asking ourselves, is this is this a memory? Is this because of what I knew before? And, you know, taking our time to remember our lives is a really good and really important thing. Our subconscious mind, you know, has stored everything that has ever happened. And let's say we get a little worried every time we get around a red-headed librarian that wears glasses. You know, maybe we had a bad experience as a child with a red-headed librarian who wears glasses. And if we can take the time to remember that, then it doesn't come up and surprise us and scare us where we suddenly meet somebody who's red-headed and she's carrying books and she's got glasses and we think, danger, that's a dangerous person, you know. And it may not be at all. It may be the sweetest person you've ever met. So taking the time to remember our lives and research back within ourselves is a really good idea. And that'll help us to know if such a thought or such a dream is either a leftover worry or a premonition.
Thank you very much, Josephine.
Sure.
Looking at the clock, I can see that we're fast approaching the end of this show, but I'd love to squeeze in just one more question. So this one is from Barbara from Paso Robles, and she asks this question. Is there any way to influence our dreams, such as reading, praying, or thinking of pleasant past events? And she also thanks you for graciously offering everyone this wisdom and information.
Oh, that's very sweet, Barbara. Thank you so much. And, you know, I often like to say, and I'm going to say it right now, which is that I just thank you all so much for giving me the opportunity to be able to talk about this subject. It's something that I've studied a long time, so I do have some information and knowledge about it. And I do acknowledge that every one of you who's listening to me has many things that I'm sure you could teach me too. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that I feel very honored to have been put in this position as a teacher here on the radio show, and I thank you so much for it. And I really see and know that you all have equal and way more abundant beauties and wisdoms to offer in other realms. So thank you very much, Barbara, for that. And I see that in you. So, yes, we can influence our dreams. One of the wonderful things about dreams is that if we take action in the dream world, it will change our waking world. And also, if we take action in our waking world, it will change our dream world. And one of the little stories that I like to use to explain this is one of the students that I had years ago had this reoccurring nightmare of a great silver ball that was rolling down the road right towards him, and there was no escape. He couldn't get off the road to the right or the left, and he would always wake up just as the ball was about to crush him and roll over him. And so we talked about this dream, and I said, you know, this is one of the things that the Senoi dreamers do, the dream culture from Malaysia, is they call for allies, they call for helpers in their dreams when there are troubles. And that would be another good thing to do with the children who have nightmares, is to instruct them to call on their helpers and get help in their dream, and to keep resisting until help arrives. And so what this young man did in his dream world was he, just as he was about to wake up, just as that ball was about to roll over him, he realized that there was a big pipe lying right by the side of the road, and there was a handy pothole right in the middle of the road. And he picked up the pipe, and he put one end in the pothole, and he held it steady and firm, and it caught the ball, and it stopped that big silver ball from rolling over him. And then, interestingly enough, he noticed that next week, and this was a young man, he was in his late teens, and he had a wonderful mother, but she was very set and very certain in her ideas about what he should do with his life. And her ideas for what he should do with his life happened to be very different from what his ideas were about what he would like to do with his life. And after he had that dream, he found within himself that following week the courage to say to his mother, you know, no, I love you. I know that you love me. I know that you have my best interest at heart, but I am not going to do that. I am going to do what I feel called to do. And he stood up to her, and he never had that reoccurring dream again. So, yeah, we absolutely can influence our dreams, and praying and thinking about pleasant past events certainly does help, and also programming our dreams, having a little something that you might say like, tonight I will have a dream that will bring me insights about this problem that I've been having. And then having a journal handy and awaken in the morning and catch whatever images they are, no matter how off the subject they may seem, and then just working with them to see how those images can help you with the problem. And so that's a great way to influence our dreams as well, to use them as means to help us solve our problems in our lives.
Well, that really speaks to the power that our dreams have, both to teach us, but actually to completely change the whole direction of our lives.
Absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for questions tonight. So for those of you listening, if we didn't get to your question, we'll do our best to get to it next week, as we will be looking at dreams again. And next week's show will focus more on dream interpretation, different methods for interpreting dreams. And you can find the link to next week's show on Josephine's website. Just go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. But before we close, Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Yes, thank you, Tony, so much. So I'd just like to recap some of our main points about dream recall, which is, you know, to move slowly or as little as possible on awakening and to get good quality sleep and to keep the same sleep schedule and to have your journal handy and close by and to not have any interruptions from children or pets and maybe make yourself a nice dream pillow.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and then in closing, I'd also like to give this blessing, which I also learned from my dear friend Jana Massey, and it goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love, and we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so I thank you all very much for giving me your time today and for listening.
Well, thank you so much for that and for the blessing, Josephine. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you tonight. I trust that everyone listening in at home enjoyed tonight's discussion on dreams and developing psychic ability. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.